The German author Heinrich von Kleist, who lived a short life from 1777 to 1811, only wrote 8 stories, but they are among the most famous and influential short stories in German literature. This story is entitled Saint Cecilia, or the Power of Music. Around the end of the 16th century, when they were furiously destroying images in the Netherlands, 3 young brothers, students in Wittenberg, were reunited in the city of Aachen with a 4th brother who was a preacher in Antwerp. They were in town to claim a legacy from an old uncle none of them had known, and hoping their business would not take long, they stayed at an inn. For several days, the preacher told them about the very important things that had been going on in the Netherlands. Now, it so happened that the nuns of the convent of St. Cecilia, which in those days was to be found just past the gates of the city, were about to celebrate Corpus Christi, and the 4 brothers, aglow with fanaticism, youth, and the example the Netherlanders had set, decided to give the city of Aachen its own taste of iconoclastic destructiveness. The evening before the festival, the preacher, who had been at the head of more than one such expedition, got together a band of young merchants, sons, and students who believed in the new doctrine. They spent the night in the inn, eating, drinking, and cursing the papacy. And when day broke over the towers of the city, they began their reckless proceedings by equipping themselves with all sorts of instruments of destruction. In a mood of exultation, they agreed on the signal which would start them smashing the scenes from the Bible depicted on the windows, then set out for the cathedral to the ringing of its bells, confident they would find great support among the people and determined to level it to the ground. The abbess, whom a friend had informed at midnight of the danger the convent was in, tried in vain to get the chief imperial officer of the city to send some men to protect the convent. This officer was himself an enemy of the papacy and covertly a believer in the new doctrine. He turned down her request, claiming that she was imagining things and that her convent was not in the slightest danger. Meanwhile, the time had come for the celebration to begin, and the nuns prayerfully, and with dreadful anxiety about what might come, made preparations for the Mass. They were entirely without protection, except for an old beadle of 70, who stood guard with a few armed servants at the entrance to the church. It is well known that nuns in convents, who can play all instruments, provide their own music, and that they often perform with a precision, understanding, and sensitivity, perhaps because of the feminine nature of this mysterious art, not to be found in orchestras whose members are men. But now, to make things doubly disturbing, Sister Antonia, the conductor of the orchestra, had been very ill for some days with typhoid fever. So even without taking into account the 4 blasphemous brothers, who could already be seen enveloped in their cloaks among the pillars of the church, the nuns were terribly worried about their performance. The abbess had, the night before, selected a very old Italian mass by an unknown master, which they'd already done several times with great success, thanks to the extraordinary piety and sincerity which had gone into its composition. She was more determined than ever not to be thwarted, and sent a nun to ask once more how Sister Antonia was, only to learn that she had lost consciousness and could not possibly conduct. Meanwhile, the situation in the cathedral had already become most serious. Over 100 troublemakers of every class and age, armed with hatchets and crowbars, had gradually gathered there. Some servants standing at the doors had been provoked in the crudest way, and extremely shameless things had been said to individual nuns whose pious duties had, at times, brought them into public view. Things got so bad that the beadle went to the sacristy and begged the abbess on bended knee to postpone the celebration and put herself under the protection of the commanding officer of the city. But she was firm as a rock and said that the festival in honor of God must take place, reminding the beadle of his duty to defend with his life the mass and solemn procession that would be held in the cathedral. And she ordered the nuns, who stood quivering in a circle around her, to immediately begin the celebration with an oratorio that had often been performed in the church, although it was of inferior quality. The nuns in the organ gallery got ready to do just that, when all of a sudden Sister Antonia appeared, looking vigorous and healthy, though her face was a little pale, and proposed that they proceed without delay to perform that very old Italian work that the abbess had so urgently insisted they play. When the nuns asked in amazement how she had recovered so quickly, she replied that there was no time for idle chatter. She handed out copies of the score that she was carrying with her, and sat down at the organ in radiant ecstasy to direct the superb music. Then what felt like celestial peace flowed into the hearts of the pious women. Even the anxiety they had felt lent their souls wings to fly through all the heavens of harmony. The Mass was performed with wondrous splendor. Throughout the expanse of the church, not a single breath was drawn during the performance. During the Salve Regina especially, and even more during the Gloria in Excelsis, the more than 3,000 people who filled the church seemed transfixed, with the result that in spite of the four accursed brothers, not even the dust on the pavement was disturbed, and the convent lasted till the end of the 30 Years' War, when, however, by provision of the Peace of Westphalia, it was taken away from the church. But the triumph of religion was, as one could see a few days later, much greater than even this. For the landlord of the inn where the four brothers were staying went to the town hall to report their strange and shocking behavior, and declared to the authorities that, to all appearances, they must have lost their wits. The young men, he said, had come back after the end of the celebration of Corpus Christi, silent and depressed. Wrapped in their dark cloaks, they had sat around a table and asked for nothing but bread and water. About midnight, when everything was quiet, they had intoned the Gloria in Excelsis with hideous, gruesome voices. Then he, the landlord, had gone up with a light to see what was making such strange music. He found them sitting up at the table and still singing. But at the stroke of one, they became quiet, lay down on the floorboards without saying a word, slept a few hours, and were up again with the sun to begin, on bread and water, the same dreary and dismal monastic life. Five times, the landlord said, he listened to them at midnight singing the Gloria in Excelsis, with voices that rattled the windows of the house. No other sound ever escaped their lips. The Gloria was not totally devoid of musical merit, but the way it was shrieked made it unbearable, and the landlord was obliged to ask the authorities to remove from the inn these men who were undoubtedly possessed by the devil. A doctor was sent to examine the young men and found them just as the landlord had described them. But all his attempts to discover what had struck them down in church, which they had entered in full possession of their senses, failed. Some people from town who had been sitting near them during the Mass were summoned to give evidence. They testified that the brothers did indeed disturb the service at the very beginning, but that as soon as the music began they became quiet and attentive, and then, one after the other, they sank to their knees, and like the rest of the congregation, prayed to God. It was right after that that Sister Antonia, the regular conductor, died of the typhoid fever, which, as was said before, had confined her to bed. When the doctor came by order of the prelate of the city to examine the score of the work that had been performed the morning of that extraordinary day, the abbess handed it over in a strange and profoundly emotional state, assuring him that absolutely no one knew who had really been at the organ conducting the Mass. A few days earlier, the castellan and several other men had heard testimony which proved that the deceased had been lying in a corner of her cell at the convent, totally unable to move while the music was being performed. A nun, who is her blood relation, had been chosen to be her nurse, had not budged from her side the whole morning that the celebration of Corpus Christi had taken place. Accordingly, the Archbishop of Trier, who had been told of this strange event, was the first to actually express the belief, which the abbess, for many reasons, did not dare to make public, that Saint Cecilia herself had performed this terrifying and glorious miracle. The Pope, several years later, confirmed this view, and even at the end of the 30 Years' War, when the convent, as was mentioned before, was taken away from the church, The legend tells us that the day on which Saint Cecilia used the mysterious power of music to rescue the convent was set aside and honored, and during the celebration they sang serenely and splendidly the Gloria in Excelsis.